Like she said, I'm Peter Van Dyke from UW River Falls. I'm going to be talking about the tissue culture method development for the transformation of prairie cordgrass, a project that I worked on as part of a research experience as an undergrad at South Dakota State University. Prairie cordgrass, a little background on it. Its scientific name is Spartina pectina. It's native to the tall grass prairie. It grows quite well on marginal land, in fact. So low fertility and high salinity, that is one of the reasons it's being looked at, is that a lot of the land that we're going to have to use for, say, biofuel production is going to have to be more of the lower fertility, the more arable style of land, being that all the other good quality land is already being used for food crops. A little interesting fact that I found, actually, is the some of the family relatives for the Spartina actually are more on the coast, so like the saltwater coast, for example, on the Gulf. And then right here where we're out down in Texas, we're actually a little bit out of the grass prairies. Some little more information facts. It is rhizotomous, so it will show perennial aspects, so it can be grown year after year with one season, with one planting. And it also is warm season, so it will grow quite well compared to, say, some other grasses during the later parts of the summer when it could be easily 80, 90 degrees. So, and actually found this map at the USDA. It actually has been found to be natively grown as far north as the Northwest Territories of Canada, so up there probably quite close to the Arctic Circle, and even all the way down into Texas, and almost all the way across the continental U.S. So the question is, why should we transform it? Well, one reason is the development toward a monoculture. If we look at, say, corn, which is quite synonymous as being a monoculture, you plant it at day zero, it germinates on day X, and it's pollinating by day Y, and you have complete seed maturation by day Z. Well, with prairie cordgrass, being as it's not a homogeneous seed, for example, is you could, say, plant it on day zero, some will be germinated by the end of the first week, some will be ended by the third week, fourth week, and there'll be some that even 10 weeks down the road hasn't even germinated yet. So you'd have poor stand establishment, for example. Another thing is to increase the yields. Now, at a research that was done at South Dakota State University by Gonzalez and Arvid Bowe, for example, reported that their yields there were already higher than switchgrass, which means that prairie cordgrass is possibly a localized crop that could be grown there compared to, say, you know, switchgrass, which may be down in Illinois, acanthus, which could be somewhere else on the prairie, for example. But the one they're really focusing on is the decrease of lignin production. Lignin, as we all know, is kind of the a dark horse in the ethanol, cellulosic ethanol production. Another possibly agronomic traits. So if we look at a little picture of the plant cell wall structure, the yellow component, kind of down the middle there, is the cellulose, and that is what you're trying to find in cellulosic ethanol. The blue lines is the hemicellulose, which is kind of a mix. It's kind of hard to describe exactly. It's a lot of five-member carbon rings and doesn't exactly bow well to basic cellulosic degradation, but it also kind of ends up being as somewhat of a junk in the end, you could say. But the lignin is the orange little wiggly wires that, in essence, interweave between the cellulose and the hemicellulose. It basically makes it practically undigestible. And there are ways to do it, but it involves possibly doing extreme acid scarification, for example, which basically means you put the cellulose in and you find the acid of the acids that can break it apart, which is not necessarily the safest thing to be working with, for example. So the process that I used was the various seedlings, as in the top picture, were germinated on MS media. MS stands for Maraschegi Skoog, a very common basal salt combination, various chemicals, ammonium nitrate, a little bit of cobalt, a little iron, and other compounds was used. And then after they were germinated, so once they had reached either were two leaves were showing or was starting to curl from the top of the little petri plate that we used, it was extracted. Any roots that had formed were cut off, and it was then placed onto other plates that contained callus production, chemicals on it. An example could be 2,4-D, a very common herbicide when used in high concentrations, but in this case, a very low concentration. Others included copper sulfate, silver thiosulfate, and benzylamine. And the process continued. Now, this is the next step. A visiting scientist in the lab, Dr. Olalia Perez, had been working on that since the beginning of the year. And so a lot of that stuff had already been developed. So the next step that I was more working on was the transformation aspect of it. So adding the GUS gene. GUS stands for beta-glucuronosidase. Basically, it's a gene that codes for an enzyme that, when given the right substrate, will produce a blue coloring. So very visual that the gene is present. And the method that we used was use Agrobacterium as the bacteria that contained the vector that contained the GUS, as well as the gene that coded for agromycin, an antibiotic resistance. So what we did then is we grew the Agrobacterium, and this is a kind of a continued culture that was being grown all throughout the summer. And then on a Friday, we would take a colony from the solid media that was grown, and we would put it in liquid to get so that we have a liquid culture growing. And this was a LB, which is lyrial broth, and it was supplemented with antibiotics, both kanamycin and ampicillin. So that way we had a pure culture of just the Agrobacterium and the Agrobacterium that contained the vector, because those genes were also encoded upon the vector. After we had our culture and we had some cali that was produced, we then placed the two together in a simple solution with a 1 mil of a 1% carumdrum solution. Carumdrum is basically silicon carbide, and it is used to basically scratch the plant cali. So basically added little nicks into it that allow the Agrobacterium to walk on over, in essence, and add the plasmid into the cell. After that was done, the cali was transferred to a sterile piece of filter paper that had been wetted with acetoserone, which is actually a chemical that is exhibited by plants that had been wounded. So this is, in essence, mimicking what happens actually in nature. And that was done for 3 days, at which point it was then transferred to DIN2 media plus the antibiotics, in this case, agromycin, at varying concentrations, because we're trying to find out what the concentration at which we can, in essence, determine when the callus will die and will continue living. So the results of that part, inconclusive. The exact reason why is undetermined. It's still kind of a little work. The callus that was at agromycin at very high concentrations higher, possibly, I think if I remember right, 10 times higher than what's been reported for other grass family plants, was still growing. And that was in a control, which should theoretically have been killed off because the agromycin kills the plant. But it didn't. So we had to. So obviously now there's a step back, which yields the question as to why it kept growing and what could be done to go around that. One idea that Jose and I had talked about was possibly even, a different antibiotic to go around that. And of course, then you have to start and figure out at what concentration again, and making sure you have a vector that contains the gene for the resistance of that antibiotic. So, some references. So I'd like to thank you for coming to my presentation. I'll take any questions. Yes?
So, you just started off talking,
but you are planning to continue to do more? It's in the works. This was a summer research project that I did this past summer. If I go back to South Dakota State University as a graduate student, this is one idea that I have. Does that answer your question or not?
Is cordgrass being used in the ethanol or biofuels industry right now, or is it something on the horizon? Or?
This is a possible horizon crop, especially with cellulosic being as it's not well known, the exact processing methods. There's really no plants out there that have been constructed that are actually feasibly producing ethanol in quantities of acceptable use, i.e. the profit margins. So this would be one that would be on the horizon. Then, assuming the lignin can be decreased in there so there's less of it, this could also be a product that could then be used as a crop and feed the plant and make sure that and allow for profit margins because it'd be easier to process, less inputs.
You mentioned that competition with the good land for crops. Well, is it adapted to, you think, to marginal lands?
It's found on marginal lands naturally. Is the way I read and understood it. I never went out to the field to visit. I've spent my whole summer in the lab. It's the way it's they found it in the low-lying high salt soils of South Dakota, for example. So it's natural to those soils. So it's the thought is it can be transferred to other places and still have that tolerance to it. Great. Well, I'd like to thank you again for coming.